Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, it's estimated about 1 million people in the U.S. have Parkinson's disease. And as we have seen with celebrities like, Pope John Paul II, with Michael J. Fox, Muhammad Ali, the symptoms, you look at, especially Muhammad Ali, the symptoms can be devastating. Larry Mueller here again. Thanks for joining us. Really glad to have with us again. It's been a long time, but she's back. Dr. Michelle Chucci, she has a joint appointment in the Department of Surgery Division of Otolaryngology, faculty member in the Neuroscience Training Program at the UW. Her research interests include swallowing disorders and Parkinson's disease. And so I'm really happy to have her with us because we get a lot of questions about it. You may have a loved one with Parkinson's disease or another movement disorder. What's it meant for you? You can certainly join in with your questions and comments today at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Dr. Michelle Chucci, just back from a long trip.
Australia. Yeah, and I did want to mention my tenure home is in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders, where we deal with things like communication and swallowing problems, which is a big deal to Parkinson's disease.
Yep, absolutely. Well, first of all, let's just do the basic. What is Parkinson's disease?
Sure. We had a much simpler answer for that about 15 years ago. We would have said it's a movement disorder. We would have said that there's specific cells that use the neurotransmitter dopamine that end up dying off and thus causing tremor and rigidity and postural instability. And that part is still true.
Still true.
But what we know is Parkinson's disease really affects the whole brain, and we're starting to understand that it affects the whole body. So before you even know that you have Parkinson's disease and you've gone to a neurologist because you have this tremor that you really just can't ignore anymore, there's a host of other things that happen that can be earlier warning signs.
What are those? Let's talk about those.
Sure. And so they seem a little bit nonspecific until you start putting them together. Loss of sense of smell is one of the first things that happens. You have some GI issues, some gastric motility, so you might have constipation, you might have heartburn. You have something called orthostatic hypotension, which means when you stand up, your blood pressure's supposed to go up as well, but it doesn't. So then you get kind of dizzy and have a low blood pressure event.
Oh, boy.
Voice gets more quiet. Start eating foods that are a little bit easier to eat. So you might stop eating things like steak. And so all of these symptoms are kind of manifest in what we call the preclinical or prodromal stage, probably about 10 to 15 years before you would go to a neurologist for some of the more overt signs.
And the overt signs are, again,
the tremor, rigidity, postural instability. If you track people over time, you can see that their handwriting is getting smaller, the voice is getting smaller. There was a famous soccer player, Ray Kennedy.
Yeah.
They looked back and saw that his left foot was acting kind of funny years and years before his diagnosis.
I occasionally play golf with a guy who's has a real hard time just putting the ball on the tee.
Right, because of his tremor.
Does that necessarily mean that that person or somebody has Parkinson's?
Not necessarily. So Parkinson's disease is sort of under this umbrella of Parkinsonism. And so they might not have, a true form of sporadic Parkinson's disease. They might have a variant of that. And there's other diseases and other parts of the brain that are affected that could cause a tremor as well. So a very common one is essential tremor, which is it's a benign process, but you end up getting a tremor that's kind of difficult to treat. Or there could be damage in another part of the brain called the cerebellum.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might get a different kind of a tremor, especially if you're trying to hit a target. The tremor gets worse.
Oh.
So there's a lot of neurologic diseases that have overlap with Parkinson's disease. The best way to know if you have Parkinson's disease proper is when you go to a neurologist, they give you a full examination, and then they try you on a drug to replace dopamine. And if that gets rid of some of the dopamine-related symptoms, then they can say, yeah, I think you have Parkinson's disease. But really, you would need to really verify it, you need some fancy scanning, you know, tagging.
Brain scanning?
Yep, brain scanning. So tagging dopamine and see if it's degrading. And the best way to actually confirm it is by postmortem autopsy.
Well, we don't want to, you don't
so
want to
go
that.
There.
No,
right.
You don't want to go there for sure.
No.
Dr. Michelle Chuchi, our guest today, who is a specialist, one of her specialty areas is working with people with Parkinson's disease. And so it's great to have her along. And I hope you'll join in with any questions you may have. You have, may have a loved one with Parkinson's disease or another movement disorder. What does it mean for you? Do you have questions about it? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Is there a particular age? Is it mostly elderly? Or all elderly that wind up with it?
Sure. The average age of diagnosis is 65 years of age, but as I mentioned before, it probably starts about 10 to 15 years before this.
Yeah.
There are other variants. So there's a young onset Parkinson's disease, which tends to happen in the 30s and 40s, that has a little bit more of an aggressive course. There's some genetic forms of Parkinson's disease that start even very, very early in the teens and 20s. And then there's a theory, because your dopaminergic cells are pretty vulnerable. They have a high energy demand, and dopamine itself is neurotoxic. There's a theory that if everybody would live long enough, they'd probably end up developing a Parkinson's disease.
Oh, okay. And right now, about 50,000 people are diagnosed with it every year, something like that?
Yeah, 1 in every 1,000 people have Parkinson's disease. There's over 7 million worldwide. There's 7 million in the United States, I believe. And then, you know, even in the Wisconsin area, we think, you know, even around Dane County, for example, there's probably about 50,000
Wow.
out of Parkinson's disease. So it's pretty prevalent.
We had a caller question from Ray, who wondered, why don't people have tremors when they're sleeping if they have the disease? They tend not to, apparently, to have it.
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. So we're not exactly sure how tremor works. In a nutshell, basically, you have neurons in your brain that are firing, and they tend to fire asynchronously in order to do various tasks. And in certain disease states, it seems like these neurons get entrained to one another, and they start synchronously firing. And so when you're going to do something, these neurons, instead of working independently, sort of start working together and cause that tremor. When you're asleep, you're not really using that part of your brain, and so that kind of activity doesn't really have a chance to manifest.
Very interesting.
That makes sense.
No, it does make sense, but it also opens the possibility of maybe training yourself or your brain to be able to do that when you're awake.
That would be fantastic to capitalize on that. Again, there's a treatment called deep brain stimulation, and that's when you insert electrodes into the brain, and then you deliver a current, and that current does things that we don't fully understand. One theory and how it controls tremor is that you're sort of disrupting this abnormally entrained cycle or firing patterns. Some people would completely disagree with that. We're not really sure how it works, but at face value, it makes some sense to me, at least.
Jane in Wauwatosa has a question. Hi, Jane. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm not sure if I have so much of a question, but just a comment that I'd like some feedback on. I am a physical therapist that works with lots of Parkinson's patients. I actually see patients in their home, and I frequently will come across a referral for if someone has fallen or just an overall decline in their ability to move, and they will have a Parkinson's diagnosis, and maybe they've had it for some years, and they're only being managed by their primary care physician.
Right.
And so kind of one of the trends that I've seen, unfortunately, in my opinion, is that a patient will have problems with mobility. They go to their primary care physician, and I'm sure well-meaning, they put them, you know, on a Parkinson's drug, and then it's like they're not followed up. And so a lot of these patients don't have any education as to that it's Parkinson's disease, you know, and like what that means, and that it's a progressive condition, and that it really, in my opinion, you know, should be followed by a neurologist. And so I frequently find myself in the position of educating patients and trying to help them find a neurologist so that they can maybe get medications adjusted and that kind of thing.
Yeah. That's a really great point, and I'd like to take it a step further that neurologists also subspecialize, and so the most important neurologist to see if you have Parkinson's disease is a movement disorder specialist, because they are the most well-trained, they're fellowship-trained to deal with Parkinson's disease, which is very complex, and typically the medications that you would give for Parkinson's disease don't do much for balance and falls. If you're looking for other resources for education, there's a lot of national organizations. And here in the state of Wisconsin, we have a Wisconsin chapter of the American Parkinson's Disease Association, where there's an information and referral center, and there's courses like PD 101. There's exercise programs, educational symposia, support groups, and that's a really great way to get people hooked up. And we are statewide, so yeah. If you contact that organization, they can really help you out in that regard.
I think we have that up on our Facebook page. If not, we'll get that up on get a link up on our Facebook page. Talking today, thank you very much, Jane, for calling. We're going to take a quick look at the news. Visiting with Dr. Michelle Chuchi about Parkinson's disease. Questions? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. News next. Movement disorders like Parkinson's disease can have a devastating impact on the life of actually not only the person with the disease, but their loved ones as well. And because it's both chronic and progressive, there's an increasing loss of movement and control over your body. Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have Dr. Michelle Chuchi with us today. She has a joint appointment in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders, and as well in the Department of Surgery, the Surgery Division of Otolaryngology, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. She's with us, and she's done a lot of work in the Parkinson's area. So, Dr. Chuchi, again, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You may have a question for her, and I hope you'll join in as we talk Parkinson's. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Jim in Wanakee's been waiting a bit, so let's go to Jim. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, hi. Thanks for this program. My question is, I'm wondering if the doctor could talk a little more about the relationship with Parkinson's with dementia. I have at least a couple of relatives, and I've had some friends with Parkinson's, and I was wondering about if there was any particular recommendations that, you know, outside of medication that she could recommend in terms of somebody that has progressed to the point where I think there's something about Lewy particles that in the brain that lead to dementia. Would it be futile to have a person, you know, like you're working with, try to do some mental brain work or like brain games, like Lumosity or other kinds of things, if the dementia has progressed from the Parkinson's to the point where it's really hard for them to almost manage their daily affairs?
Yeah. Sure. That's a really great question. So the type of dementia that you're referring to that co-occurs with Parkinson's disease is called Lewy body dementia, and it occurs in about 50% of people who have Parkinson's disease, so it's pretty common. They do try to manage it somewhat with medications, but as you mentioned, this might not be that effective. So there are some behavioral strategies that you can try, and I can give you some hints and tips, but I believe the best thing to do is to actually go and get an evaluation by a speech-language pathologist and a neuropsychologist so you can really figure out the strengths of this person, so you know how, what they can do and do well, because those strengths can be used as kind of ways around some of their weaknesses, and then also kind of determine where their weaknesses are. Is it their short-term memory? Is it confusion? And if so, then there's things that you can do to set up the environment to make it more easy for them to navigate. You can have reminders, you know, alarms mm-hmm. going off, clocks, memory books. And I do believe that the more engaged you are in your life and the more that you do challenge yourself mentally, so you don't necessarily have to go, you know, pay to play, you know, to use Lumosity. Mm-hmm. You can do things like crossword puzzles or, but really whatever that person likes to do. You might need to modify it a little bit, but really just keeping them engaged. And then I really highly recommend getting some advice from a professional on strengths and weaknesses and then how to compensate for those weaknesses.
It's interesting that you want to not work so much on your weaknesses, but on your strengths.
Exactly. Yep.
Which is usually the people would think the other way around.
Right. But, you know, sometimes you can work on the weaknesses and have some improvements. But a lot of times we try to augment what try to maintain what the person already has. So yeah. It doesn't get any worse. And then use our strengths to have some workarounds.
Jim, thanks a lot for calling. Great question. Appreciate it very much. Joe in Milwaukee up next. Joe, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. Love the show.
Thank you.
So I got a question. She said that it has to do with your dopamine receptors. Now, if you were to be younger and people abuse drugs or whatnot and they use all their dopamine and all that kind of stuff, are you more likely when you're older to get Parkinson's?
That's another good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. So there are some drugs that are very neurotoxic to the specific cells that die from Parkinson's disease. In the 70s, people were making a synthetic heroin that ended up killing... It's called MPTP, and it ended up killing off dopamine neurons and replicating Parkinson's disease. There's other drugs that utilize dopamine and norepinephrine, which is another catecholamine, and you tend to things like methylphenidate, Ritalin, cocaine, things like that tend to dump out a lot of dopamine and can actually damage those synapses. Whether or not you manifest a Parkinsonism or you have other sorts of problems like mood or anhedonia, which is really a lack of interest in not getting pleasure out of anything, you know, how it manifests is kind of unclear. So I can only really partially answer that question, that you're probably putting yourself at you know, more of a risk by messing around with neurotransmitters in your head.
There we go. Thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. We have Gary in Duluth, Minnesota has, I think, a kind of a related question there in some ways. Hi, Gary. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I think I can answer some of the questions from the previous caller. I'm a physician who treated psychiatric patients non-medically, helping them get off of their psychiatric drugs. There are many, many psychiatric drugs that can cause Parkinsonism, and some of your listeners may be taking some of them. We are now seeing pediatric patients who are getting Parkinson's disease, totally unheard of, before the era when pediatric patients were starting to get antipsychotic drugs, neuroleptic drugs.
Sure, like Haldol and yeah. Things like that.
So there's a lot of neurotoxic drugs out there that are legally prescribed, and many of your patients may be on them. And
they create problems, yeah. Comment on that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess I was thinking more in terms of more drugs of abuse, but you're right, there are many drugs out there that have the unwanted side effect of causing a Parkinsonism. And sometimes even after you stop them, that can't be reversed.
It can't be reversed. So how do you know, how does a person know? I mean, what kinds of, what types of drugs would that fall in under? Dr. Chuchi?
So as Dr. Gary mentioned, there's a lot of the antipsychotic drugs. So things like Haldol, Haloperidol, and feel free to fill in here, too. Mm-hmm. I'm not a physician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the antipsychotics, the Seroquel and the Risperdal and the Geodon and the Abilify are all culprits. They're well documented.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's something, boy, what do you, you know, that's a real problem, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Did you have a question about heredity? Oh, no, that's somebody else. Sorry. I'll let you run the board, Larry. This is your show.
Thanks so much for calling. But at least it's something that you need to take, be cognizant of for sure. I want to give Arlene in Pelican Lake a chance to join us, and she has a question, I think, relating to heredity. Arlene, hi. Let's see. Let's get her on there. Hi, Arlene.
Hi. I have an uncle on both sides that had Parkinson's. On the one side, it basically was pretty much just the tremors, and I wasn't aware that he had much of anything else, and he was like 84 when he died. The other one, I'm not so sure. But I have a friend who was diagnosed last year, and then I have another friend that just passed away this week, and his had the bad dementia thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, does hereditary play much of a role in this, and especially to the type that includes the dementia?
That's another great question. And so, you know, when we talk about Parkinson's disease, we typically talk about sporadic or idiopathic Parkinson's disease, meaning we're not quite sure what causes it. But there have been documented cases of genetic forms of Parkinson's disease. And I don't know, I think we're up to 17 or 18, maybe even more, different kinds of genes. They occur in specific populations, but there's some really common ones and some more obscure ones. You know, really the current thinking is that Parkinson's disease is probably caused by, a play between environmental factors or something that can turn on a gene and a gene that puts you at risk for Parkinson's disease. So we do think that your genetics does play a role, but that hasn't been completely sorted out yet. And it's really something that's being heavily studied right now. And yes, there are certain forms of Parkinson's disease. I don't know if they're related to specific genes or not all the time, but Parkinson's disease doesn't look the same for every person. So there's people who have more tremor predominant Parkinson's disease. They tend to have less dementia and cognitive problems. There are people who have akinetic or freezing type Parkinson's disease. They tend to have more dementia and cognitive problems and a faster progression. So it's Parkinson's disease is very heterogeneous. It's a bit of a moving target. And then the role that genetics may play in that is not completely clear yet.
Very interesting. Thank you again for calling, Arlene. By the way, we have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page as well at The Larry Mueller Show. But give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Did have a caller who couldn't hang on, but wondered, how is it possible for people with Parkinson's to ride a bike? I saw it on 60 Minutes. I didn't see that particular show, but maybe you did.
Yeah, sure. So it depends on how bad the movement disorder has gotten and how severe the balance issues are. But one of the best things that you can do if you have Parkinson's disease is to find a tandem bike riding buddy, because they can help you balance the bike, and then they can keep the cadence up fast enough so that you can get going and you get the benefit of the exercise. So things like bike riding, walking, any kind of, you know, cardio, high intense exercise has really been shown to improve dopamine levels in the brain. So I really encourage people to safely exercise every day, actually.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, we had an email question from Ann in Madison. Is there any diet or dietary supplements type of exercise or other, well, you just talked about exercise, but that's part of her question. Type of exercise or other lifestyle habits that are helpful when controlling or delaying Parkinson's?
Yeah, that's, I think lifestyle has a lot to do with living well with the disease. And so a concept that we've been really exploring lately is resilience. And resilience is your ability to manage the disease. And I do believe that if you do things like exercise, so you need to exercise and you need to work on the systems that are affected. So if you are having a hard time walking, you have to do walking-specific exercise. If you're having trouble balancing, you should do exercise that really works on balance, like Tai Chi and yoga. If you're having trouble with fine motor skills, find something to do, work with wood, needlepoint, whatever your thing is. But you really need to get active and to stay active every day. Another thing is just practicing some mindfulness. It can be really stressful to be diagnosed with a progressive neurologic disease. You don't know what's going to happen to you, how bad it's going to get, how long will it take. And so learning some mindfulness techniques like meditation. Again, you can do this through yoga. We have great centers here in Madison that teach mindfulness. And then staying engaged. So one of the biggest things that happens to people when they have Parkinson's disease is they don't want to tell people about it. They might be embarrassed or they don't want them to know. And they start to withdraw from activities that give them pleasure. And so to counteract that, you really need to stay engaged in the things that you do. And there's a lot of programs around town designed specifically for people with Parkinson's disease to stay engaged. But you don't necessarily have to do that with that group, family, friends, loved ones. Mm-hmm. If you like to canoe, keep canoeing.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, so don't shut down and develop ways of being resilient and exercise specifically. If your voice is quiet, go to a speech pathologist and work on your voice.
Jim in Milwaukee, thank you so much for calling. Hi.
Yes, hello. You had mentioned something about the synthetic heroin. Now, I know methadone is given to help heroin addicts. Does the methadone have anything to do with giving people Parkinson's?
You know, not to my knowledge. This was a bathtub synthetic heroin in the 70s. So it wasn't developed, you know, by a pharmaceutical company and tested like something mm-hmm. like methadone is. So
okay, one quick question, too. Anything to do with pesticides? I live on a farm.
Yes.
Anything with pesticides?
Herbicides or whatever.
Yep, herbicides and pesticides. There's so paraquat, rotenone are two major ones that are known to cause Parkinson's disease. Your risk factors for developing Parkinson's disease are rural living, living and working on a farm, drinking well water, and if you have a lot of pesticide and herbicide application, it really increases your chance of getting Parkinson's.
Thank you very much. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. So rotenone you mentioned?
Rotenone.
And what was the other one that you mentioned?
Paraquat.
Oh, paraquat.
Yep.
Okay. All right. We have more callers. You can join in again at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to Marsh in Madison next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. So I had just heard you a moment ago talking about how methylphenidate and Ritalin can cause Parkinson's-like tremors and symptoms.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if, as a kid, I was given that whole spectrum of stuff for ADD-related stuff. And I was wondering if I should be on the lookout for any greater risk of developing Parkinson's as a result of taking those meds.
Yeah, so I think I might have not answered that question in a way that I didn't want to worry everybody. So when people are prescribed Ritalin and methylphenidate, it's in safe doses.
Yeah.
And known doses. So I was talking about more people who abuse these drugs that end up taking way too much. So I don't think that you have something to worry about. Again, I'm not a neurologist, so I don't want to make these sweeping statements. So what I meant to say is that there are drugs that are toxic to dopaminergic neurons and can cause a Parkinsonism. There's drugs that are prescribed you know, for certain conditions that you have to take, and it's sort of, you know, it's what you have to deal with if you want to control your psychiatric symptoms. In terms of Ritalin and methylphenidate, it can do wonders for things like ADD, as long as it's prescribed in safe doses and doesn't get toxic. So I don't want to, you know, alarm everybody out there who's taking Ritalin that they should stop. I'm just saying too much of a good thing can be bad for you.
So don't be over.
Yeah, don't be
saying twice as maybe I'll double the dose because it's twice as much as better.
Right, exactly.
That's not true.
So hopefully I
hopefully that strains it out, boy, Marsh. Fears. Thanks, yeah, Marshall. Thank thanks a lot for calling, because we definitely wanted to get that straightened out. Appreciate it very much. Durkin, well, should he be anyway? I mean, anybody who may have taken that sort of drug, or anybody, I mean, how worried should we be if Grandma had it, or here, Grandma had it, and I'm taking some drugs, or just Grandma had it?
Right. Yeah. It's something we definitely think about, but we don't know if Grandma had just sporadic Parkinson's disease, or if she had a genetic form that, you know, is an autosomal dominantly inherited thing. So we don't know, and she didn't have genetic testing. My grandfather had Parkinson's disease, so it's always in the back of my mind. But
yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Dirk in Green Bay, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question is, my dad has been come down with Parkinson, and I've noticed, you know, a big difference in his demeanor and just his attitude, I guess, towards life. He used to lead a very active lifestyle. He was a hard worker, built houses his whole life, and it seems his almost like depression has set in, like, because he's not able to do a lot of things that he has always done.
Right.
And me and my brothers and sisters, you know, we notice this in him, but it's how do we...
What do you do? And I'm just breaking in because we're getting shorter on time. We only have a couple more minutes for Dr. Chuchi to respond. So go ahead.
Sure. So first of all, it's important to know that depression is part of Parkinson's disease. So Parkinson's disease affects mood centers of your brain.
Okay.
And so the depression actually needs to be treated. And if he wants to go the route of antidepressants, it's often recommended. The second thing is his motivation is going to be affected by Parkinson's disease, too. So it's not just depression and feeling bad about having Parkinson's disease. It's the actual organic disease process that's also causing these behaviors. So I think maybe considering medications, and then also basically you got to get him out of the house and get him doing things he likes. And it might be hard at first, but I think over time it'll be a lot more rewarding. And so you just, however, you can beg, bribe, cajole, but make it fun for him. Make it something that he wants to do, and you know, maybe get him into a support group or be with other people with Parkinson's who struggle with the same thing, so he doesn't feel like he's the only one who's having these issues.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of solutions. You know, the guy built houses. Maybe he gets involved with some sort of carpentry work for as a volunteer for something.
Yeah, Habitat for Humanity. Build birdhouses, you know, whatever he likes to do with his hands. Maybe it's not building a
whole
house anymore.
Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he never wants to do that again. But you know, it's just something I thought of as you were talking about it.
But as I said before, staying engaged or getting re-engaged is really important to wellness. But also being mindful that depression, apathy, that's part of Parkinson's.
And we have your. Thanks so much for that great question. And we have, again, a website that people can go to. And what's that website? It's up on our Facebook page, but what is it?
It's the Wisconsin chapter of the American Parkinson Disease Association. So if you do a Google search for that, it should come up. I believe it's
We've got it up.
WI chapter APDA or something like that. But you can. It's easy to find.
Yeah.
Great group.
And go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We've got a link there. Thank you so much for being with us today. We'll get you back.
Love to come back.
Love to have you back. Dr. Michelle Chuchi from the University of Wisconsin Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders and the Department of Surgery, Division of Otolaryngology. Thanks to her. And thank you for listening. Garden Talk tomorrow here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.